Hi, I'm Chris. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Chris.
I'm just going to do a quick recap on steps 1, 2, and 3. The idea behind step 1, that I'm powerless over alcohol, powerless in two ways. Once I start, I can't stop. Once I stop, I can't stay stopped. And that step becomes so much more real as I go through the steps, because it's not just alcohol that I'm powerless over. By the time we get to, you know, we'll talk about next week, 7, I mean, I can't even fix my shortcomings. You know, I'm pretty powerless over a lot of things, not just alcohol. But that was where it started. It took me a long time to figure out that drugs and alcohol were my problem, and a longer time to figure out that they weren't, that it wasn't the drugs and alcohol at all. Because I go into rehabs, and I'll share, you know, when I first got sober, I actually felt worse. And their heads all nod, you know, like, oh my God, I'm like, you guys identify? You know, they feel worse than they did when they came in. And that's because the solution is drugs and alcohol, not the problem. So I'm looking for a solution that's actually going to work, not hurt everybody in my life, maybe not kill me, you know, and that's what AA has given me. But the second part of the first step also becomes much more real as I go through the steps, because I'm not just unmanageable when I'm drunk. I mean, things are really unmanageable when I drink. But not drunk, sober years, I still suck at managing my life. Go figure. My life is unmanageable when left in my own hands, no matter how long I'm sober, no matter what I use or drank. For me, I need to put it in God's hands. So the first step, by the time I actually digested it, there was really nothing left for me to do except two. I mean, if you really believe that you're powerless, screwed, I can curse, fucked, then why wouldn't you seek a power greater than yourself? What else is there to do? You're screwed. So that's where I found myself at about 2 years sober. I'd been in the rooms for a long time, but no one had actually taken me through the big book. And someone took me through the big book, and when I saw and read through the first step, the second step just seemed like ridiculously natural. But I didn't really believe in a God, but I was willing. Called it Amelia. Felt like I was talking to the wall. But that's what I did in the beginning. And for the third one, I had been stuck on it for a long time. I mean, I mentioned all this stuff last week, but I had been stuck on it for a long time prior to getting to it in the big book. And when we got to it in the big book, she basically pointed out the idea that it's just a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. Good idea. You know, like I said, going back to step one, my life is unmanageable. So let me seek something greater than me, and let me decide that it'd probably be a good idea if that higher power ran the show rather than me. Because again, I suck at it. So the idea of step 4 was presented to me as, how do you know you did step 3? You sit down, you shut up, and you do a fourth step. And that's what I did. I sat down right after, it says next, we launch onto a course of vigorous action. So that's not like next Tuesday. It's like next, immediately, the next show coming on. That's within like a half hour, maybe an hour. Next. So I went home and I started my inventory. And the way that my sponsor laid it out for me, it was four lists. The first list was resentments. You know, people, institutions, and principals with whom I'm angry. People, really easy. Everybody I know was on that list. I had many, many, many resentments. There's two types of people that I've sponsored. There's the one like me who's like, where the fuck do I start? And then there's the one that's like, I only have 6 resentments, you know? And I'm like, what do you mean you only have 6 resentments? Go home and write more. I don't get that, but it's happened. Anyway, I was like, where do I start? People, principles, you know, the ideas, those morals that I had, that if you saw me while I was using or even when I was first sober, you wouldn't have thought I had morals. But I swear to God, I had them. I just wasn't capable of following through on them. So I had a lot of resentments against these morals or principles, which I couldn't live up to on my own, even though I would have liked to. And institutions, you know, high school, college, at that point, you know, when I was sober a little while, AA, NA, you know, CA, NEA, I was pissed at basically everything. So I sat down and wrote who or what I was angry at. And then the second column is why. I get to explain myself, what this thing or person has done to me. I would do columns 1 and 2 in a bar. Like, they were awesome. I had a great time doing columns 1 and 2. Ripped everybody apart that I knew. Column 3 is where it got uncomfortable for the first time. Because what do you mean, what did it affect? They're assholes. End of story. It made me angry. Like, that was about as far as I had ever gone with the idea of a resentment. And then you're talking about, like, self-esteem. Did it affect my ambitions, my sex relations, my personal relations, emotional security? I did not want to talk about that. Financial security. You know, these things were not something that I had ever thought about. The idea that these resentments actually affected more than just making me angry. So the third column is where I personally got uncomfortable. I know a lot of people get uncomfortable with the fourth column, which is basically we're looking for our own mistakes regarding the person or principle that we have a resentment against. And I was running a big book study last Friday, and someone raised their hand and they said, you know, what if you really had no part, you know, in the resentment? And, you know, around the room, a lot of people said, you know, it's not about our part. There is no part. It's your mistake. But the idea that we can usually pick something that we did related to the resentment that we could have done differently. With certain resentments, especially innocent children like we once were, sometimes we hold on to those for 20, 30, 40 years. And in order to deal with those, I had to look at it like, who watered that resentment for 20 years? Who pet that resentment? Who loved that resentment? You know, me. How many people got hurt because I had that resentment? So that could be the most basic of where I had to start with some resentments. But a lot more of them were a little easier to see, that I was dishonest with this person. I was fearful. That one came up a lot. Dishonesty also, the idea like, well, I just didn't say anything. You know, well, dishonesty is two ways. You know, you can either literally say something that's not true or not say something that should be said. You know, and that was a new one for me. You know, dishonesty is flat out lying. But not lying, but not saying certain stuff, that's also being dishonest. So now I had this list, proof that everybody in the world is awful. And then I have this third and fourth column where we're getting like into uncomfortable territory. But again, what are you willing to do to stay sober when we first come in? Anything. I'll go to rehab. You know, sometimes we're not even willing to do that, but we're pretty desperate. The longer we were out there, the worse beaten we were, the more desperate we are. It's ironic with alcoholism. The later you catch it, the better chance you have of getting sober. With almost every other disease, it's the opposite. Catch it early. It just doesn't seem to work like that with us. But once we hit this emotional bottom, we're ready, no matter when that is, though. So getting into this uncomfortable territory, I lost my train of thought, so I'm just going to go with that. We had a second list to do. Now I had this resentment list. Now she set me down and said, you have to write your fears down, all your fears. I had tons of fears. I was scared of everything from death to my mom. I mean, I was scared of everything. School, success, failure. Being in a relationship, not being in a relationship. Being fat, being skinny. I was afraid of everything, and it's like the most uncomfortable place to be. That's where I was when I first got sober. I couldn't live with alcohol. I couldn't live without alcohol. There's nowhere for me to live. There was no other option but this, because it offered this something in the middle, something that is living without alcohol but not miserable. That didn't seem possible, but anyway, I wrote down my fears. And she had me do a second column, which was why I had the fear. And eventually we read in the big book that there's one reason only one reason I had all of these fears. You know, I could write down, oh, because, you know, I don't want to lose my mom, or because I get lonely when I'm not in a relationship. I could write those things down, but it all comes down to self-reliance. And that idea in the big book, when I read it the first time, made no sense. You know, we're all scared because self-reliance failed us. You know, the blah, 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 blah. But self-reliance failed us, okay. But when she broke it down for me, the idea that I can't rely on myself to fix certain things. And those are the things I'm scared of. I brought up spider on Friday night as, you know, I can handle a spider. I don't really fear spiders very much. I mean, there was one in my car while I was driving, and it got a little close. I had to kill it. I was really upset about that. But anyway, I can handle the situation when there's a spider. Put it in a cup, put it outside, if it's in my car, kill it, whatever it may be. I don't feel fear. So someone who's scared of spiders is the type of person that runs, that can't deal with it, that needs to depend on somebody else to take care of the spider situation. So they can't rely on their self to deal with the spider. So for me, I don't have that fear, but there's tons of things that I'm scared of because I don't have the power to fix it. You know, there's certain things in our life we can handle, and there's certain things that we're completely powerless over. You know, my mom's cancer coming back. Self-reliance will definitely fail me. I can't keep it from coming back, and I can't fix it if it does. All I can do is be there for her. And there's a prayer, a small little prayer in the book, around the time where we're discussing fears, and it says, we ask God to direct us what he would have us be. And I like that, because it's not what I'm supposed to do. It's who I'm supposed to be. And fears get in the way of that. Good daughter, you know, my mother, as we get into next week also with amends, I mean, I was not available to my family when my mother had cancer. My sister was complete, she was 89 pounds, not eating, not going to school. My dad, OCD and other addictions. And my mom was in the hospital with breast cancer and lymphoma in the intestines. And all I could think about is I gotta drop my sister off at my aunt's house so I can go snort coke. That's what I had to do. So anyway, fear kept me from being there for my family. Today, I'm there. By the grace of God, that specific situation hasn't come up. But I'm there for them because I can rely on something. And it says, like, what are we going to do? Is there a different way than to just fear? And it says, yeah, there is, that we can rely on something greater than ourselves. Have a little faith. I read somewhere that fear, that faith is not the opposite of fear. It's walking through your fears with God. I thought that was really cool because I had always seen them as opposites. But you really don't. I'm not completely relieved of fear, but I do face them when they come up. You know, I survive them through faith in God. So that was the second list, and then there was the sex conduct list, which my idea of a sex conduct list was to write everybody I had sex with, right? Like, that's what a sex conduct list is. That's as far as, like, I could comprehend that we were going to talk about my conduct. So she filled me in that that was not it at all. It was not, you know, a way to get a number count. It just wasn't a list of people I had sex with. It was a list of people I affected with my sex conduct. Now, that could be a boyfriend's mom. That could be a boyfriend's little brother. That could be my sister, my dad, my mom. It doesn't have to be someone that I actually had contact with like that. And that opened my eyes to the idea that my conduct in that area didn't just hurt the people that I thought it hurt, you know. And that list actually works really well with any harms done, because it actually says, you know, in the beginning, whom had we hurt? Again, it doesn't say who do we have sex with. Whom had we hurt is what it asks us. So, you know, the first time I did my fourth step, I did it purely as just related to my sex conduct, but as I've gone back and done them, by the grace of God, my conduct's gotten a little better. So that's not so necessary anymore. So, you know, I can sit and maybe write about different harms that I've done, different behaviors, but, you know, and there's a prayer in the book that deals with the sex conduct. You know, I'm supposed to ask God for direction in each questionable situation. identify with that. There's a lot of questionable situations that come up. You know, what should I do? How am I going to make a decision that won't hurt another person? You know, having the other person's well-being uppermost in mind, what, you know, I'm supposed to try and think of these things today. There was also a prayer related to the very first list I talk about, the resentment list. And it's basically, God, help me to see that this person is sick. God, save me from being angry. I say it so often because I can't just stop my anger. I really can't. I've tried to follow my morals. I'm just not capable of doing it without God in my life. It doesn't seem to work. So at the very end of this, we started to talk about a sex ideal. And, you know, sex ideal. Blue eyes, 6'4", you know, that's like what's going through my head is a sex ideal. That's not what that list is about either. It is about how I want to be in a relationship and how I want someone else to be toward me in a relationship. What do I deserve and what do I actually want to bring? Very different from blue eyes and 6'4". You know, that wasn't it at all. So I sat down and I started to write, you know, what I would want and what I would want to give in a relationship. Very different list, you know, something that I had never really thought about before. And it can really be the same list, what you want and what you want from someone else and what you want to bring to the relationship. And it's pretty helpful, you know, when you're out of control, you know, you can kind of come back and say, what was it I wanted to do again? Because I'm pretty sure it wasn't that. And also, you know, when you're approached by someone who maybe doesn't fit your sex ideal, instead of, you know, dating them for a year and then getting miserable and then, you know, going back after another year and, you know, 6 years later, you know, instead of doing that, like, you could be like, you don't match my sex ideal. I'm not going to start this with you. You know, so that's what that can do. So I wrote that list. And then it was time to sit down and talk. You know, we are ready to have a talk. And the question is, are you ready to have a talk? Are you ready to really look at this stuff from a different angle? And I went to my sponsor's house. And it was probably like 11 in the morning that we met. And we had lunch and dinner together. At the beginning of that step, you know, after writing my whole fourth step, I had a pretty decent idea that I sucked. I had like a lot of stuff that was wrong with me that I didn't quite see prior to writing that step. So some of my anger had really switched over to like guilt and shame. So a lot of the fifth step was really dealing with the guilt and shame. You know, how am I going to deal with that? And it came down to the idea of responsibility. I did those things. I'm responsible for it. But I don't have to be guilty or shameful for it. I was sick. And I remember, you know, I say this as just a summation of my fifth step. You know, when I walked into my sponsor's house that day, if little, you know, 16-year-old Chris walked by, talking about myself in the third person, if little 16-year-old Chris walked by, I would have, you know, tripped her, kicked her, didn't like her, she ruined my life. You know, that's kind of how I felt. And by the end of that fifth step, I'm not going to say that I would have hugged her, but I definitely didn't think that everything was her fault anymore. And it just opened the door a crack to the idea that I could be forgiven and that I can forgive, even for the things I had no part in, you know, that idea. It became a lot clearer with the fifth step. They, you know, it says why we need to do that in the big book, because we're biased. You know, self-appraisal ain't good enough. Well, I got all this written down, me and God know everything. There's certain things that, like, I was pretty sure I was going to take to the grave. And I shared them with Kelly that day. The fact is that the 10th step is a way to catch stuff that would end up on a 4th step right away. And the 11th step is a way to catch it at the end of the day or maybe even at the end of the week and deal with it. But I don't do either of those perfectly. So in the last 9 years or so since my first fifth step, well, I have done other fourth steps, and there's two main reasons that I've done them. Either new shit happened, or old shit came up that I didn't know existed when I wrote that first fourth step. So it's not that I left anything off that list, but once I was aware of the fact that I needed to do one, and I didn't do it right away, that's when I got sick. I got spiritually sick for for probably about a year, downhill. It wasn't good, you know, and it's almost more painful to watch yourself get sick after being well than to get well the first time. I have to say it was really, really painful. And this idea that I got to get back to where I was, I got to get back to the spirituality that I had, and the fact is I know I got to go forward, look for, you know, a new experience. So that was my fifth step. It was a day of talking with another person, getting some insight, some other ideas. She shared her experience with me. I shared mine with her. One alcoholic working with another. And the sixth step, you know, like I said, I was now really, really aware of all these things that I was responsible for and the things that I had done while using and while sober for the first 2 years, because I was sick, very sick. A lot of amends that I had to make related to those 2 years of sobriety. So, am I ready to have God remove all these defects of character? Yeah. Do I think he's gonna? I'm not sure. That was like questionable for me. I wasn't quite sure if God was powerful enough for that. You know, questioning step two happened to me a few times as I continued through the steps. But so the sixth step reinforces an idea that we saw in the third step, that, well, if I could just be ready to remove all my defects, then I would just remove them all. But I need to sit down and ask God to help me to be a better person and to be there for my family and to be a better student and a better employee. I need to ask God for those things, because I make that decision just like the third step, but if I don't sit down and do the fourth related to that decision of not being angry, it don't follow through. I'm not capable of it. So I go to God. And that's just basically asking me a question, though. There's really nothing to do. I've heard people, I'm on my sixth step. I'm like, what are you doing on your sixth step? I don't know. Like, are you or aren't you? So I was ready, and that's where I, you know, I left Kelly's that day. I went home. I read step six and seven, and I went back through my whole fourth step. And that's the only time it gives us a break between steps, by the way, between five and six. We get an hour. Thanks. You know, that's it. That's the only break. We should be working. You know, in my experience, I needed to work continuously, because the 2 years I did no work, I was miserable. And then I started working, and stuff started working. You know, other stuff in my life started working out. And not the way I thought it should, not in that way, but I was okay. You know, and one of my main prayers today is that God do this for me. You know, God help me to be okay with whatever it is, whichever way this turns out, is like a really big deal. And I say that a lot. Thy will, not mine, be done. So, amen. So, I'm going to end it there, and we'll get on to the rest of the steps next week.